If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're confident when it comes to your work and life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same confidence when it comes to refinancing your existing mortgage or buying a home. It lets you understand all the details so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Nothing more American than owning a car, right? Well, that's the way it's been. But the future, the pretty near future, may tell a different story. Automakers are preparing for a change. More and more Americans ready to hail a car rather than own one. Maybe hail a self-driving car. This hour on Point, the future of car ownership and reimagining the way we move. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Can you see it? The end of car ownership in this country. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from San Francisco is Tim Higgins, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. His big piece this week is headlined, The End of Car Ownership. Tim Higgins, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
How is that going to happen? I mean, this is the country of car ownership. How do we go from that to the end of car ownership?
It'll probably be a slow evolution. We won't wake up one morning and see all the cars driving themselves and nobody owning them. But we've already seen an evolution of how people look at transportation in cities such as New York or San Francisco, where you can pull out your iPhone, go to your Uber app, and summon a car on demand. And it comes within a few minutes and takes you where you need to go. Now, the next step would be, why do you need the driver there? That's a cost. And now if you've got essentially a robot chauffeur that can take you anywhere, it seems like a pretty convenient way to live.
You say it may not be so fast, but it may not be so slow either. I mean, I'm looking at one study here from RethinkX. We'll talk with one of the authors soon. Looking by 2030, private car ownership, they're projecting, will drop 80% by 2030. The number of passenger vehicles on the roads here would go from 247 million in 2020 to 44 million in 2030. I guess because they get reused by lots of people who don't own them individually. The cost of electric ride shares, 4 to 10 times cheaper per mile than buying a new car by 2021. That is not so far away, Tim.
The challenges now are probably going to be social. If you looked at the story that we published at the Wall Street Journal in the comments section, almost 400 comments, and a great majority of them were negative, of the sense of, you're going to have to pry my dead fingers off the steering wheel to take away my car. Now, that I don't know the ages of those people, but I probably believe that they're a little bit older, whereas if you look at surveys and research, younger people, maybe people who aren't even interested in buying a car, who are more interested in their next smartphone, they say they are more open to the idea of not having to own a car and turning control over the vehicle to the vehicle. So it'll be a generational kind of shift. The other issue here is the infrastructure, things like that. The car, the technology is not ready to be on the road just yet. And the way that vehicles are developed and whatnot, it'll take some time. Automakers such as Ford are talking about having some of this kind of technology fully autonomous, fully self-driving by 2021. So it is closer than we probably can imagine, but it will probably take some time, most people believe.
Tim, it's such a mind-bender compared to where we've been. Take us through the nuts and bolts of it again. I mean, we get Uber and Lyft and all the others that are out there right now if they are very active in the part of the country you live in. And of course, you know, some people out in the boondocks, just in rural areas, won't have such access to that.
But I get that. Maybe Americans will say, I don't need to own a car. It may even be cheaper for me to, I don't have that many automobile needs. I'll just call Uber or something when I need it. Where do we go from there to get to the end of car ownership? You're writing in here about fractional car ownership, about subscriptions. How would each of those work, Tim?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, let's talk about a specific example that's going on right now in Phoenix. Google has a self-driving car program that they've been working on for a number of years. They've renamed it Waymo. So the Google car program has moved into a new phase where they are working with families in that community to use their self-driving, use Google's self-driving minivans to go about their daily life. And Google is talking about this idea of they don't want to replace, they don't want to become car makers, but they want to replace drivers. And so they potentially what could happen here is, you know, maybe I have a typical family, I live in the suburbs, maybe I own two cars, maybe I get rid of one of those cars. I continue to own my car for weekend activities, maybe I've got kids that need to be taken to school and, you know, the car seats and whatnot. But maybe I get rid of that second car because one of the members of the family, all they do is go to work and back, and that's what they're using their car for. And it just becomes so much simpler to say, hail one of these car services and whatnot. So that's what they're experimenting now to see what it's like for those families, what needs to happen, what that experience needs to be like. And so when you start talking about a world where the average home doesn't own two cars, that's a hit to automakers who are accustomed to selling two cars. Right now, the average new car is held for about 60 months before somebody gets a new one. You know, it's a cycle that the auto industry is accustomed to, but you start to pick away at some of those fundamentals, and it changes the conversation of a lot of things that the economy is based upon.
I mean, you may have drivers who say, there's no way I'm giving up my car, but the people who make those cars see the trend line, see, I guess, what's coming. Here's a little bit from Ford, Executive Chairman Bill Ford. This is last year at a Fortune magazine Sustainability Energy Technology Summit. And this is Bill Ford himself speculating on where the automaker Ford would be in the year 2021. Listen closely.
We'll be further down the road in these mobility solutions. Autonomous vehicles will be not an anathema to most people. In that time frame, we'll still have internal combustion engines, but we'll be heavily down the electrification road as well. The way people access vehicles will be different. You all know Uber and Lyft and Zipcar, certainly. We're experimenting with ways to have fractional ownership.
The executive chairman of Ford talking not there about selling cars, but about mobility solutions. And Ford, not as far down this road as GM at the North American International Auto Show earlier this year. GM chairman, CEO Mary Barra, told Bloomberg she thinks driverless cars will start to take hold in the world of ride hailing.
As we get to autonomous vehicles, we believe it'll first start in a service, in a rideshare type of environment. And I think customers will define exactly how it goes.
And then, of course, you have other players who are all about this. This is Lyft's Director of Transportation Policy, Emily Caster, saying by 2025, autonomous vehicles, self-driving vehicles, will make car ownership obsolete in major U.S. cities, replaced by on-demand, what she calls subscription services.
Instead of having to think about all of the hassles of owning a car, where you have to worry about insurance and car payments and maintenance and parking and fuel, all of those things will be handled by the platform. They'll be abstracted from the user experience and rolled into a seamless subscription, almost like cell phone minutes, where you can take rides and not even have to think about that. Have it be something that happens pretty magically.
You don't have a car. You don't own a car. You have one whenever you want it. You subscribe to, I don't know, what will we call it, car time, car miles. Tim Higgins has been writing about it for the Wall Street Journal. Headline on his big piece this week, The End of Car Ownership. Tony Seba joins us as well right now from San Francisco, co-founder of RethinkX. It's a think tank that looks at technology-driven disruption. Author of a big report, Rethinking Transportation. You can find that at our website, onpointradio.org. Tony Seba, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
You're the guy making these big predictions that are kind of hard to believe against the backdrop of American history here. But looking forward, you say private car ownership will drop 80% by 2030. Walk us through your take on how that may happen.
Yeah, so we did an analysis on an economic, purely economic basis. When you converge on demand, meaning something like Uber or Lyft, electric and autonomous vehicles, essentially the cost per mile of transportation will drop by anywhere from 4 to 10 times. So it'll be 10 times by 2021 or whenever autonomous vehicles are approved, which we assume to be 2021, it'll be 10 times cheaper to rely on an Uber without a driver and electric than it is to buy a new car. The average American family spends about $10,000 a year in owning a car. So it'll be a decision between, do I want to spend $50,000 over the next 5 years, or do I want to spend $1,000 a year, $5,000 over the next 5 years? And essentially, every time there has been a 10x, this is what's called a 10x difference in cost for similar services in history, there has been a disruption. So essentially, that's going to happen starting about 2021. And this, what we call transport as a service, will be even 4 times cheaper than the costs of operating a car that you already own, that you already paid off. So it'll be up to 4 times cheaper than fuel and insurance and parking and so on. So even those who don't drop their cars in the beginning, who start playing with this new transport as a service, in the end, within a year or two or three, will say, why am I paying 4 times more to maintain this car that I'm barely using?
And at 10 times a cheaper transportation, you're saying that's the point at which you sort of bust the cultural mold, as deep and strong as it has been in this country, that I'm going to own my own car.
Exactly. I mean, and, you know, the same thing that you can say now about, you know, owning a car is very American, you could have said about owning a horse 100 years ago, or owning a, you know, VCR 30 years ago, and so on. Once you get that 10X, essentially that goes away very quickly and nobody remembers it. You know, the junkyard is full of stuff that we're very, that we love to own and was very American. But then, you know, the digital camera came, the smartphone came, and so on. And we just dropped it and moved on.
Wow. And not so many Americans now depending on a horse to get somewhere. And still, a horse was your own. And you would ride it where you pleased. Tim Higgins, are you buying this 10X cheaper? Is that commonly understood to be the way things are going?
It's one of the arguments for it. And so that's why the auto industry is very concerned and very much trying to race to be part of this debate and part of the race.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's being called the end, not just called, but predicted, the end of car ownership with ride-hailing, sharing, self-driving cars. We're looking at the view that the American romance with dependence on car ownership will end, and maybe a lot sooner than you might imagine. What do you think? Can you picture it? Have you stopped owning a car already? Why? When self-driving cars show up, would you be happy to snap your fingers for one rather than own your own? Can you picture streets full of self-driving pods ready to take you where you want to go? And no car in that garage anymore. Maybe it's a family room now. Maybe it's a pool room, a ping pong room. Tim Higgins is with us. Wall Street Journal reporter has been writing a lot about this. You can read his big piece, The End of Car Ownership, at our website, onpointradio.org. He joins us today from San Francisco. Also in San Francisco, Tony Seba is here, co-founder of RethinkX, think tank there. He's got a big report out himself that you can read called Rethinking Transportation. People not talking about cars anymore, but mobility solutions. Mobility solutions. Tim, Tony, lots of listeners responding online. Jim writes to us on Facebook, this is what I've been predicting for a few years now, that we'll buy subscriptions for access to self-driving cars and hail them whenever we need them. But Michael writes, he says, maybe in an area with more than a certain population density it would work, but 33% of the state of Wisconsin lives in rural areas where that stuff would not be economical. And Christina writes to us on Twitter, I think the idea of ditching the personal car is a luxury for residents of density. I guess she means by that city dwellers. What about it, Tim? Is this a luxury? Is it for city dwellers only?
Well, this was a heated conversation at dinner I had the other night with a bunch of startups and people in the industry debating whether this was going to be just the plaything of the big cities or the rural communities. Would they be able to take part in this? And one of the arguments was that once you can put a robot car into a town of 10,000, you can calculate how many of those robot cars you need to take care of that population. Mm-hmm. And the argument was you probably didn't need very many, but The overlying point is in those initial years, the most likely places that these are going to roll out is robot taxis. It's in big city in bigger cities because they need to essentially fence this program into a certain area where they've spent a lot of time collecting the kinds of data that's needed to train these systems and to take care of try to reduce the amount of variables and that sort of thing. So we initially expect these kinds of things to roll out in what we call geo-fenced areas.
What does that mean, Tim?
Yeah, so perhaps you'll have it in a downtown of a certain community, or it'll mm-hmm. be in a certain suburb or something like that, someplace that it essentially fenced in invisibly, if you will, where the companies have spent a lot of time testing and going over the roads and trying to figure out what are the hurdles that their car might run into while out in the world on a day-to-day basis. Think about how cell phones initially came out. You didn't have coverage all over the world at the mm-hmm. get-go. It was mm-hmm. in certain areas. And some of the thinkers in this space think it'll be similar to that.
Tony Seba, can you describe how this whole idea of subscription would work? That instead of ownership, you would subscribe. What does that mean practically? How would that work?
Well, it'll be no different from what we have now with Uber or Lyft. I mean, basically, we take our cell phone, we call Uber or Lyft, and we call them. I mean, it's on demand. It'll happen, every time you have a disruption, you have new business models. And it could be as simple as just hail an Uber, or it could be pay $10 a month like we do with Netflix, and it's all in, all you want to basically all the miles that you need, or it may even get free. I mean, imagine Starbucks on wheels, where Starbucks will take you to, 40 miles down the road to work, and they'll give you free transportation in exchange for you, drinking three coffees on the way over. So there will be many different business models. Subscription is one. One is on demand. One is free. And many more will come along the way. Advertising, entertainment. So as we have seen with the web, a whole host of companies popped up, Facebook and Google and Amazon and so on, offering different business models. And that's essentially what's going to happen with transportation.
We've got plenty of callers with opinions on this. Perspectives, Dick in Providence, Rhode Island. Dick, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to relate that I was an engineer at Ford Motor Company back in the late 60s, early 70s. And I was working on various systems to go into self-controlled or autonomous vehicles at that time. And my comment about that, it's about time that it's happening now.
You worked on it all the way back in the 60s. Now it is happening. I mean, the technology is way down the road. What do you think about, you were an engineer in the industry. What do you think about American habits, Dick? Do you think they'll really change?
Well, that was part of the issues that we were having to deal with at the time. We were trying to take up that whole psychological issue of, because we weren't thinking of all the models today, but just the whole idea of a driver giving up the wheel. And so those did go into our designs, and that was some of the feeling. I went into a different ends of engineering from there on, but it was a thought that was taking place, and I appreciated Ford's lead on that and the experience that we got out of it.
You think it'll happen? Can you imagine the USA without extensive or very much car ownership, Dick?
Well, I'm in my early 70s right now, and okay. I've been through Zipcars, and I'm now a subscriber to Uber. So the whole idea of not having to drive the vehicle and the whole idea of rental or some sort of subscription, that even is more appealing to me because my reactions aren't as good as they used to be. So let's get to a place where I make me being on the road would be safer.
Dick was in the biz. Now he says, bring it on. I appreciate your call from Providence. Let's go to Montreal, Canada. Brian, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You've got a batch of engineers. I'm another one calling
good.
To endorse this idea. I've only owned one car in my entire 68 years of life, and that was a good car, but it once was enough. And after that, when ran down, I didn't need it again. Montreal's possibly an exception, but it is in North America, and it's fairly dense. It's all fitting on an island.
Yeah.
And we already have three car subscription services competing for people. We were the people who invented Bixi bicycles and spread them around many metropolitan areas. And we have a city administration that really likes this idea because it simplifies a whole bunch of things about our winter city. Without cars littering the streets in winter and summer, maintenance and snow plowing goes better. We have a very dense downtown core. And if one-third of that very precious space is devoted to just parking cars for the workday, what a tremendous waste. When you have a dense core like our city has, it makes public transit so much better. It optimizes so many things if time, space, and money aren't devoted to keeping Detroit or Tokyo as rich as they have become. We have got better uses for our money and our time.
Brian in Montreal, I really appreciate that call as well. Tony Siva, in your report, you look a lot at the knock-on effects of this, not just individuals not owning automobiles in anywhere near the same percentage they do now, but what it would mean if you take a couple hundred thousand cars or million cars, I should say, off the roads for U.S. for streets and cities and parks and parking. Paint the picture.
Yes, so today we only drive 4% of the time, our cars, 96% of the time, basically it's parked. When you have autonomous vehicles that are driving, say, 40% of the time, essentially you don't need parking. You don't need the parking that all the space that we use today. So essentially 80, 90% of the parking spaces, especially in the cities and in the downtown areas, will be vacant, obsolete. And just to give you an idea, I did the numbers for Los Angeles, and you can fit three cities the size of San Francisco in the vacant space left by parking. So we'll need no parking. Highways, we have too many highways now because we're going to have fewer cars. We're going to have 80% fewer cars.
That's because... cars, these autonomous vehicles, as you picture, will be in use all the time. They won't be parked. They'll be shared between people. So the car, instead of sitting in a parking lot, it's always taking somebody somewhere. So you don't need as many cars overall.
You need 80% fewer cars, essentially. That's what we have modeled. Others have modeled 3 or 10%, but you need 80% fewer cars, which does all kinds of things for the urban landscape. And we'll be able to, for the first time in 100 years, redesign our cities with all this empty space that is taken up by parking and roads and highways and so on and so forth.
That's a lot of space for parks, for bicycle paths, for pedestrians, for new housing.
Yes. Housing, green parks, new businesses. So basically productive, creative, basically activities, whether it's for people, people-centered or business-centered. But essentially parking is not a waste of time and financial resources. And so this would be a boom for real estate, for business, for, better lifestyle for people and so on.
Carol in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Carol, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. I think the cheapest way to not own a car is to have a relative who owns a car. Namely, my daughter uses my car every day to get to work. I don't need it because I'm retired. But suppose we both had to get to work. She can't afford an Uber every day. And I think anybody with very little money can't afford it and should preferably find a relative with a car.
Yeah. Carol, I appreciate it. Tony, what about it? What about rush hour when everybody needs a car at once? And Carol imagines this is going to cost in the future what it costs now for Uber.
It won't it'll cost about 10 times less than Uber costs now. So our numbers indicate that it's going to cost about 10 cents or so per mile, which means, and you know, 80% fewer cars are more than enough to meet rush hour demand, peak demand, and so on. I mean, most trips are not from home to work. Most trips are to the supermarket, to school, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but rush hour is still rush hour. And you know the roads are full of cars with only one person in them. So do you have to have that many cars available, autonomous, to do it the same way?
People are going to make choice. So we're going to have 80% fewer cars, which means that we're not going to have rush hour per se. Traffic is going to go away. And also autonomous vehicles use space much better than humans do. So they use space. Research indicates about four times better than we do. So
Tony, you're starting to lose me right there, though. Rush hour is going to go away. I don't understand that.
Yeah, so traffic is going to go away.
Why? I mean, people still have to get to work. They'd start working around the same time. They come home at around the same time, at least so far.
But we have fewer cars. Have four times fewer cars because...
We're all sharing? Again, we're all in there with six people or five people in the car?
We're not necessarily sharing the car, but essentially the car is not parked 96% of the time. Essentially, we have more cars going around, picking people up and dropping them off. And, you know, your average commute is about 11 miles anyway. And so the 80% fewer cars are going to be more than enough to pick up everybody, whether you want to share that or not. And buses are also going to be on-demand, electric, and autonomous. So if you want to save money and pay 5 cents a mile or 3 cents a mile, then you would take a bus or a van and so on. And if you want to pay the 10 cents or 15 cents per mile, then which is 10 times cheaper than Uber now, you would basically take the car to yourself, just like we do now. So there's room for everything, and the market will essentially provide all of the options for folks. But essentially, 80% fewer cars is more than enough to meet current needs.
I want to get some pushback here. Michelle Krebs joins us in just a moment from Auto Trader. One more call first. Bridget in New Orleans. Bridget, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I'm a millennial. I hate having a car, and usually when I go out at night, I Uber. But living in New Orleans, I solely have my car for the purpose of evacuation.
If a big storm comes, you mean, or flooding, or both.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, we saw 7 years ago with Hurricane Katrina how well the city and state took care of busing people out.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't. So the reason why I have my car is solely for the purpose of evacuation, mostly.
What would it take for you to feel confident that an autonomous vehicle would whisk you away at the moment that you and everybody else need to get out of town, Bridget?
I don't know. That's a really good question, something I need to think about, I think. But because right now I really only trust probably myself and maybe a couple friends to drive me out of the town during an evacuation.
Yeah, but there's the tension. A millennial who really would rather not have a car. That's interesting in and of itself, but there's also a dilemma right there. Bridget in New Orleans, thank you very much for that. Michelle Krebs joins us right now from Amherstburg, Ontario. That's just over the border from Detroit in Canada. She's Detroit-based executive analyst for Cox Automotive's Auto Trader. It's an industry resource website for buying and selling cars, kind of like Edmunds. Michelle Krebs, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Interesting discussion.
Very. But if I've got it right, you're not quite so sure this is how it's all going to unfold. What do you see?
Well, I think, Tom, there's no doubt that we are on the cusp of major change. What I don't think is clear is precisely what that change will be, how fast it will occur, and I think there's an unevenness in between rural, urban, and I think there are some big cultural, emotional changes that have to take place. But we certainly believe that transportation will be acquired differently, different options for it transforming over time. We just launched, Cox Automotive launched a subscription service. We call it Flex Drive. We're doing it with Holman Dealership Group in New Jersey, and that's a subscription service for used cars. So it covers your car, your insurance, your maintenance, and all that, and you can swap it out. So that's like, I think there will be those kinds of steps. We'll do those steps of what we're used to and do subscriptions versus ownership, and then move towards when we get to an autonomous era.
But wait, what is a subscription? What is Flex Drive, Michelle? I don't quite understand it. A subscription service for used cars, meaning what?
Monthly subscription. You get a car, you get the insurance and maintenance and all of that, and you don't own the car. It's another way of not owning a car.
Sounds just like lease.
you cancel the subscription when you don't want it. So and we're seeing a lot of those kinds of mobility solutions for what exists now. And then you just imagine when we have autonomous vehicles how those kinds of systems will work.
Wow. So you see it coming. What about 80% fewer cars by 2030? Do you buy it?
No, I don't think we are that aggressive, especially because we do think maybe that we will see fewer cars. It is not clear if we'll have the same number of the households will have the same number of vehicles they've always had, but we definitely see a huge difference between urban areas and rural areas. It will be much slower in coming. You know, a place like San Francisco, it makes a lot of sense.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about maybe the end of car ownership, as hard as that may be to believe or even hear in this country. With ride-hailing, sharing, self-driving cars coming, we're looking at the view that the American romance with, dependence on, car ownership will end, and maybe sooner than you think. Not all of them, but we've got one projection here of 80% fewer cars on the road by 2030. If you live in a rural area, that may sound totally out of whack. On the other hand, lots of people don't live in rural areas. Most people don't at this point. So maybe we'll have car ownership in rural areas, but cities, near cities, not so much. What do you think? Does it sound attractive to you? Do you like the sound of this no car ownership future? Does it sound practical? Would this whole no ownership thing work for you, for your neck of the woods? Tim Higgins is with us. He got us thinking about this in his big piece in the Wall Street Journal, headline, The End of Car Ownership. Michelle Krebs is with us from Auto Trader. They're right in the middle of this whole industry. She joins us from just across the Canadian border from Detroit today. And Tony Siva is with us from San Francisco, co-founder of RethinkX. He's written a big report on this. It's really interesting. You can read it, Rethinking Transportation. It's at our website, onpointradio.org. Tony, Tim, Michelle, lots of people writing in here. Dean writes, what we really want and really need is transportation that is ready when we are and connects with everywhere we want to go. Owning a car, if you get to the core of it, is not what we want. We want instant access. Well, so you say, Dean. Not everybody feels that way. But here, you know, is America 2.0 is writing to us and says, wow, this is a very... this is related to the end of cash and autonomy, kind of political take on this. It's not about convenience. It's about profits. Well, we'll look at that. And another listener says, this seems like a very urban, suburban-oriented discussion. Tim Higgins, is this just urban and suburban? Does this leave out the vast rural America?
Well, it's interesting when we talk about these autonomous vehicles, really some of the birthplace for autonomous vehicles is in places like Des Moines, Iowa, and Peoria, Illinois, where companies such as John Deere have spent a generation working on self-driving tractors and for the fields.
Sure.
And so this kind of technology has been readily adopted in rural places already.
Well, but that's in the field. I mean, my cousin Steve may be out there, you know, playing tic-tac-toe while the tractor goes up and down. But when he's ready to go to town or to church, he climbs in his pickup, his pickup.
Right. Exactly. So the idea that the technology is not – that some parts of the country won't be excited about it is, I think, false. But the idea that you know, you would give up your car out in the fields and to go into town. Now, yeah, I think that's probably a legitimate question, and that's why these automakers are and tech companies are looking at solutions where perhaps in that 20-minute drive to town or hour-long drive to town, you can turn your car into a self-driving vehicle and take a nap or do something like that. But then you could still own it. And luxury car makers are also thinking about their space in this future. Maybe it'll be a luxury to have the ability to smell the gasoline and to have your hands on the wheel and feel the torque of acceleration and these sorts of things. So the idea that there won't be cars that you own, it seems like in our generation and the next couple of generations, people will still be owning cars. It's the idea that there's going to be a segment of society that won't own a car, that can get around and still have the ability and that freedom of mobility that a car represents today.
Or you may just own a piece of a car. This is, again, Mary Barra. This is the chairman and CEO of General Motors, talking with Bloomberg earlier this year.
We're also very excited about what we just launched with Cadillac, because we have a subscription opportunity for people who really want to, you know, drive that performance V-series car on the weekend but need the functionality of an Escalade. Those are the type of things that we're looking at and experimenting with.
Every which way, not just the old straight up, it's my car, it's in the garage, it's in the drive. Troy in Omaha, Nebraska. Troy, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. So I grew up in a rural area, very rural, 15 miles to the closest gas station, 45 miles to the closest grocery store. I have young nieces and nephews that still live there. And what I can tell you is even in the younger group, car ownership is still very much tied to identity. And then the second point I'd like to make on the farmers, there is a bill in my house in our house right now. A right to repair, because farmers are pushing back on companies like John Deere that are baking in complex technologies into their tractors and making it impossible for farmers to work on their own machinery. So I think, you know, certainly in rural areas, I'm a user of rideshare from time to time where I live.
Yep.
But in a vast swath of the country, it's just not going to happen.
Of course. I mean, I totally hear you, Troy. But if we just do the math, the number of Americans who now live 45 minutes from the nearest grocery store is a darn small percentage of the country, you'd have to agree.
Population-wise.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That town is surrounded by towns that of less than 5,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You have to drive 2 hours to get to the closest town that's larger than 20,000 people.
But if all those people who live that far away still own a car, we're still going to see, we could see still a gigantic drop in the overall car ownership. Your point on autonomy with tractors is interesting here, and I want to save that. We've got other people thinking about that as well. Troy, I appreciate your call there, that very rural perspective, and it's important here. Miguel in Fort Mill, South Carolina. Miguel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing? Thanks
Pretty
for
good.
Taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I just think that with Americans, this model might work in Europe, but not with Americans. I mean, we're gluttonous. You know, the more cars, the better. And then you're telling us that you're going to get away from you driving your car whenever you want to, okay, I have an app that's going to get me a car here. We have that already. It's Uber. It's a cab. And nobody is going in to say, hey, I want to get rid of my car for that.
What if, I mean, I totally get it, Miguel. You know, the thrill of the wheel and the feel the vroom, vroom, you know, when you hit the accelerator, I get it. But what if on a drive you could put your feet up, watch a movie, take a nap, you know, lay back in luxury and let the software do the driving?
We call that an upgrade. You know, that's like when you get the bigger and better version. Like, you know, but the thing about it is, like, we get rid of a perfectly working car every 3 years to get something better.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think that Americans are going to go because it's going to be cost effective.
Tim,
that's never been the thing about having a car.
Yeah, I really appreciate that perspective as well. Tim Higgins, if it's autonomous vehicles, are we still going to have style choices here? Are we still going to have personalization, you know, the equivalent of the souped-up Camaro? Or, I don't know, is it still out there for people who want their transportation to be a statement?
Well, the personalization, I think, is one of the key things that a lot of these companies are talking about. It, and the personalization might be inside the cockpit of the vehicle. Your digital life right now is in your phone. What happens if that digital life could transfer between your phone and the inside of the vehicle? Maybe you could watch a movie on the way to work, or perhaps have that video conference call with your colleagues and just have the meeting in the car. I sat in a vehicle earlier this year that was put together by a parts maker called Harman, and that was their vision. They had replaced the windshield. They had replaced all the windows with screens, and I sat there and saw a concert, a music concert, and some movies, and it was, you know, better than an experience at the local movie theater because it was, the sound was perfect and all these things. That's one of the visions that's out there of these companies, is creating a digital world within the car, and it would be customized to your tastes and preferences and things like that. But also think about in a vehicle that doesn't – if you don't need to pay attention to driving, perhaps you sit in the car and get your nails done if you're into that, or get your hair done, or maybe you have dinner in there or something like that. It becomes a platform for like that. We've seen design companies such as IDEO have these kind of conversations and these kind of visions of you know, what the space would be used. And to your point earlier about rush hour and things like that,
yeah,
it, perhaps, you know, imagine the four seats in a car now, and it, the way IDEO would imagine it is each becomes a kind of a privacy pod, and you can have your alone time there if you don't want to talk to anybody or look at them, and you can do your own thing. So that's the kind of conversations that that they're having. And these kind of conversations are also, I would say, for a while in the future. What most likely will be on the road in the next 10 years or so are smaller projects, because in a lot of ways the technology hasn't been isn't quite ready yet. So we're not seeing all the cars removed from the road tomorrow. We still are in the process of developing the sensors and the software and all of these things. So that's why I say it'll probably be more of an evolution, because we're just not quite ready yet to replace every car with a self-driving vehicle.
Sure, but boy, they are all over it. But that is quite a change of image from the old, window down, top down, wind in the hair, to crawl into a pod to commute. Jay in Chelsea, Massachusetts. Jay, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. So yeah. I'm a maintenance guy in the city in Boston, and I go from 5 to 10 different properties throughout the day with up to 500 pounds of tools on me,
okay,
several ladders.
Yep.
And I'm wondering how something like that would be able to transfer into an autonomous vehicle. I couldn't take all of those tools out of my car every time I got somewhere and put it into another car.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us pick it up, Jay. That's an interesting question. Tony Siva, what about Jay with his 500 pounds of kit?
Yeah, there will be a company that offers a mobility solution for that, for you, for folks who need to log things around or go shopping. Or so essentially, we're going to have companies that offer different solutions for different people. This is not going to be a one-size-fit-all thing. There will be Uber for kids. There will be Uber for, you know, the elderly and the disabled and so on and so forth for the maintenance folks. And so the market will offer different solutions for different folks. And, you know, it's not just people. It's going to be also cargo. But, you know, essentially, you know, it's not going to be a one size fit all, but it's all going to be on demand, electric and autonomous, because the economics are basically there, because it's going to be 10 times cheaper. Yeah.
Sean in Athens, Georgia. Sean, you're on the air with Michelle, Tim and Tony.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Okay. What do you see, Sean?
So I drive a tow truck here in Georgia.
Uh-oh.
And and I noticed earlier that your speaker was saying that there would be 80% less vehicles on the road by the estimate by 2030.
Yeah.
What is that going to mean for my industry? What are we going to do about autonomous vehicles when they break down and things like that?
I'm really glad you raised that. Many are raising that, Sean. Mike writes to us on Twitter. I mean, there's tow truck drivers, but that's just the beginning. Mike says millions, even you have self-driving vehicles, millions of truck drivers, bus drivers, UPS, FedEx drivers, support people, I guess, mechanics, whatever, displaced by autonomous vehicles. Where is their next job? Michelle Krebs, can you begin to picture that?
Well, that is a huge issue, and that is a question we get all the time. They have an economic stake as well. So I think one of the things, too, is that this will be an evolution. And I think the other thing we need to think about is we're talking about an either-or. This isn't going to be either-or. I mean, when we do studies about, like with urban millennials, about car-sharing, ride-sharing, yes, they use car-sharing, ride-sharing, but they also like personal car ownership. And so I think we have to stop viewing it in that way.
Though Tony makes the argument, yes, that may be true to a point, but once it's 10 times as expensive to own a car, well, he sees 80%, fewer cars on the road. That's a kind of, not full on either or, but pretty close.
Well, we can debate whether that will actually happen in that time frame.
Yeah. Herm in Bloomington, Illinois, my hometown. Herm, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. You're on.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
The point I wanted to make here was that in your last segments, you had Russia hacking into systems.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that any autonomous system has to have a fail-safe for people who are in the car to move the car, either a system failure or someone hacking in. Without some sort of fail-safe device, someone could actually, you know, immobilize a whole city if they somehow get into the system. So it cannot really be completely autonomous.
That is interesting. Take control of the car, all the cars in the city, your car, drive you off a cliff. Tony Seba, can you picture an override built in here so I can cut off the Russian hackers and take my destiny into my own hands on the highway?
Yeah, well, we kill today 1.3 million people around the world in traffic accidents, and we're going to save, you know, most of them.
Because the idea autonomous vehicles will be more careful.
Because they're 95% safer, and they will be many times safer than humans. The idea that the whole fleet can be hacked, you know, it's possible, but it hasn't happened. And the companies that are writing the self-driving software are being very careful with the security. Is it possible? Yes. Is it going to happen? A whole fleet? Probably not. Should we have a fail-safe? Yeah, I agree we do. If something like that happens, then we should have a fail-safe either when you're in the car or somebody basically with, back in the storeroom, basically looking at all the cars, and if something happens, then pull them over, and so on and so forth. But, I'm concerned about security for, nuclear power plants, not for cars, really.
Yeah. Tim Higgins, I mean, Detroit, GM, and all the rest, they appear to be pretty focused on this evolution, this change.
Yeah, for sure. The issue of hacking is one of the huge issues that the industry is discussing at this point, trying to get their arms around it. And one of the reasons why this is probably a slow evolution as the technology comes along. The other question about what about breakdowns and what happens to the tow truck driver? Well, most likely in this world, they'll still be needed because imagine you've got a self-driving car that just drives itself and it comes to your house. And what happens if the person ahead of it was sick or something? Who's going to clean that out? There's going to have to be a maintenance service to take care of these cars. There are going to be depots. There are going to be places that people are involved working with these cars.
Oh, boy. Sick. You just set my autonomous vehicle purchase back by several years with that one, Tim. But you got to start on this conversation, and it is a very interesting conversation. Could portend big changes on and off the road. Tim Higgins with the Wall Street Journal, thank you so much for being with us and taking us into it.
Thank you.
Michelle Krebs at Auto Trader, wonderful to have you with us today. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Tom.
And Tony Seba in San Francisco at Rethink X. Thank you, Tony, for all your work.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for all your input. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.